Wake up, sleepyheads. This is CJSF 90.1 FM.
And you're tuning in to Slumber Party. Is CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby Community Radio from Simon Fraser University. Burnaby is located on the ancestral and stolen homelands of the Halkomelem and Squamish-speaking peoples.
You can listen online at cjsf.ca or on our radio app, which you can download from the app or Google Store, depending on your device. Keep up to date on our social media at linktree.com/CJSFradio and learn more by visiting our website, cjsf.ca. Welcome, everybody. This is Slumber Party, and I'm DJ Coco.
And I am DJ Star. Thank you all so much for joining us today on this Tuesday. It's been an okay Tuesday, I guess.
Yeah.
But hopefully we'll make your Tuesday a little better by talking about the drug crisis, unfortunately.
Yeah, not a light topic over here, but stay tuned for later on as we're going to collect our thoughts and pass them out to you. But we're going to start off with some music before we do that.
Yeah, just ease us into this. The first song is Side by Side from Crumb, from their newest album, A Mama. So, yeah, it's a good one.
Intravenous on Wednesdays from 10 to 11 a.m. for music and talk radio about all things, all genders. Discussing and approaching contemporary gender issues through an intersectional feminist lens, our goal is to educate, engage, and challenge the dominant hegemony. Intravenous, every Wednesday morning from 10 to 11, only on CJSF 90.1 FM. Diverse, independent, yours.
Yeah. Kalika, in my dining chamber. Tell a DJ rewind. In your don't know, say kind. A corona so any kind. No mistake, no behind. New time boys are bo. Better, better boys, they lose canto. You don't wanna try, you go side to. Prep, 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 proba sanjo. Jump in trouble, walk your road. Life is love from head to toe. Ups and downs, you know your own. Mix your flavors, highs and lows. I don't know. If I no stand.
Or do you like technology? Or do you like talking to people? CGSF Radio is the place for you. Here at CGSF, the opportunities are endless. You can interview artists and bands, speak up for what you believe in, or even host your own show, and tons more. To find out more information, visit cgsf.ca.
Welcome back. This is CJSF 90.1 FM, and you're tuning into Slumber Party. My name is DJ Star.
And I'm DJ Coco. Last couple songs you heard, I think DJ Star is going to introduce them.
Yeah, the last one you heard was If I Know by Nubian Twist, and I was listening to that on the bus today. It's been stuck in my head all day, so there you guys go. And the song right before that was Beethoven by Echo Estrel, a little Riot Girl punk. I really, really like that song.
Me
I think,
too.
Yeah, we were jamming out in the studio a little to it, yeah. But that's... I think those were the only two ones. So
yeah, we only went through a little bit, but we decided to jump straight into our discussion for today, which is going to be mostly surrounding the opioid crisis in BC, but specifically to the drug Trank. This is a fairly new drug. I believe it's more prevalent in the news since starting last year. Some of you might have known of it, some not. So the drug officially is called xylazine, and it goes by the nickname Trank, and as well the zombie drug. And so this is actually a type of drug that is classified as a CNS depressant, which is also an animal tranquilizer.
Yeah, so they use it in like veterinary practice a lot. It's very common, but now it's getting into the streets a bit more, which is pretty...
Yeah, not good
bad.
At all. Because, yeah, this is such a strong drug that the fact that this is only approved for animals, and specifically horses, mm-hmm. which are major... These are massive animals to knock out a horse. That's a pretty strong drug. And this is kind of shown in the effect. So if you see... You've probably seen this if you walk down the downtown east side, for example, that you see people slouched over. They look like they're not moving, and they just are in this zombie-like state. This is due to Trank, and this is the combination of taking this animal tranquilizer that's been mixed in with normal drugs such as fentanyl or heroin. It is a crazy, crazy strong drug, and... It does a lot of things to your body, so it can really dangerously suppress your heart rate and your blood pressure. And as well, it causes these really grotesque sores all over your body if you take the drug. So if you're walking down the street, you also might have seen all these open blisters and open sores that are caused by the trank. I think DJ Star saw it as well.
Yeah, just people in the street and nobody's doing anything about it. And it is a very obvious like crisis that's happening because it can lead to infection and there's necrosis of the flesh, which means that the flesh is actually dying and you can't even heal it from that point fully back to its usual state. So it's a problem that needs to be addressed quite immediately if those sores are happening. And you know, you do see that stuff on the street and it's pretty gone to a pretty high level stage of that. So yeah,
it's a serious drug, and the fact that these open sores can lead to a lot of infectious diseases, and as well having to amputate these bodies. So a lot of people who have accidentally or intentionally been taking drugs that have had trank mixed in have had to get limb amputations. And it's just a horrible thought just to think that a drug, a tiny little drug like this, can cause so many mm-hmm. problems within the body.
And it is kind of indicating how much more toxic that our drug supply is getting and more volatile as well. Mm-hmm. Like before, just a few years ago, fentanyl was a majorly toxic and dangerous, and still is, drug that was cut into other drugs for a greater high, but now fentanyl is like a drug of choice and they're mixing it with other things like trank or any of these other drugs. So it's becoming like more concentrated, more dangerous, more toxic. And yeah, that thought is really scary with the growing crisis that we have.
Exactly. And what extent can this go to as well? Like, when will humans ever stop looking for a stronger drug that we can find that people can find on the market? And it as well, this is such a bad combo.
I just want to say quickly, just to interject, that it's not even necessarily people are looking for it, but a lot of people don't even know that they're taking it until they take it.
Yeah, sorry about that. My mistake. But yeah, it just gets mixed in because it's so potent. It gets to that high feeling or that very blissful feeling quicker. I know that when you take something that has trank mixed in, it takes about 1 to 2 minutes to kick in, and it lasts for 4+ hours, and that is a really quick injection time.
Yeah, that's super quick.
Yeah, ingestion time, and it's crazy how quickly you can get that high. So when drug dealers know this, so that can get them more money, knowing that people can instantly get hooked quicker and longer. And as well, the major consequence of mixing an animal tranquilizer with these normal street drugs is that trank is not an opioid, but it is a depressant. So this means that the traditional methods of how we reverse opioids with naloxone, which is an opioid agonist, and this in normal cases can reverse the effects of a drug overdose, but we can't do that now because there's drugs that are being mixed in with this trank, and so now we can't revive people. Mm-hmm. And these people are sent to the hospital and no one knows really what they can do, to the extent of just taking their blood vitals and making them check their heart rate and things like that.
Yeah, that is a very terrifying thought, that just the changes within the drug market and the introduction of trank as something that we can't even do harm reduction techniques with. Mm-hmm. It's just like, I think the question in a lot of people's minds is, what do we do about this? How do we combat this in any way? Not that we've been doing a great job with much in the past either. So it's, you know.
Yeah. And I feel like
a tough one.
Yeah. For the first, I think the initial thing that we need to keep in mind is that I feel like this topic doesn't have a lot of awareness to it. Most people that I've talked to don't understand or know about the trank being incorporated into all these drugs and the effects of what this is going on and how this is changing the drug toxicity amounts. And it's just such a critical issue, I feel like, just spreading awareness of the opioid crisis before trying to find a solution, because it is really difficult, as we've known, to find a solution, like a mm-hmm. direct solution to the opioid crisis. And this drug abuse has been, and drug use has been happening all over the world. There's been decriminalization in Portugal that they tried out, but there's problems in the U.S. Probably maybe heard of the famous Portland decriminalization case. There's just a lot to deal with all over the world, and it's difficult to tackle this with mm-hmm. one approach.
Because there is, on one hand, raising awareness, but then on the other hand, we need to raise awareness in order to destigmatize the mm-hmm. issue as well, which I think plays a very big role in a lot of overdose deaths or drug addiction, is just the amount of stigma surrounding people who use drugs and things like that. So it creates this barrier between people who use drugs and resources that we have that are like systemically not really made for people who use drugs. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's just a barrier there where they might be scared to reach out in fear of being shamed right. or not being treated in an empathetic manner or things like that, I think is a big issue yeah. as well.
A big level of, yeah, systemic shame. Mm-hmm. We talked about this before on our episode of stigma, but there could also be self-stigma as well mm-hmm. that, like, internalizing, like, oh, I'm always someone who uses drugs, like, I'm not going to be able to change this. I don't want to go to the hospital to get help, things like that. Yeah. There's a lot of stigma surrounding drug use, and even my own family and the way I grew up, I feel like I've kind of was prone to stigmatizing, or learned that the drug crisis was kind of caused by the people themselves, and that it was their own life that caused them, or their own choices mm-hmm. that led them down that path, which now I believe, being a health science student, I learned that that's not true at all, 100%. But there's been things like just the way that we educate kids from a young age, I believe, for the opioid crisis can make a difference. It won't completely solve the problem, but we need to start having a cultural shift in general over yeah. stigmatizing these things.
And just having some very basic empathy as well as a holistic understanding of the problem, because it's not just young kids that don't know much about it, and maybe some do, but I think a lot of the older generation, even our own generation, doesn't really think about the reasons why people would turn to drugs and how that cycle can just get so out of hand that you can lose control over the amount that's coming in. It's not always monitored what kind of drugs you're taking, so there's mm-hmm. danger within that as well, and people are like slipping things in and spiking things, and it just creates like this cycle of trauma, and you just want to escape. So that's a whole other kind of subject, like the reasons why people do it and how they stay in it. Mm-hmm. But I just think a lot of people don't think about those, the context or anything before making those jumping to conclusions and saying, oh, it's their fault, or they chose to do that, so they should face the consequences of it. And nobody chooses to live a life like that, honestly. No. Like, nobody wants that for themselves, so I think that's kind of stupid.
I think, yeah, that's the biggest factor, is that who would want to live like that? No one. No one strives for a life like that.
Yeah. It is also difficult because we are kind of in this limbo of, oh, some people think that the drug crisis is a health, like a public health issue, and then some people think it's something else. So that's also where stigma comes into thinking it's, you know, like a personal issue rather than a public health issue.
Yeah. Yeah. There's actually a couple models that I know of that kind of relate to who is responsible for for the drug addiction. Like, is it the person or is it society themselves? I know that we're moving towards more of a harm reduction kind of model to help save these people who are not saved, but try to help these people who are using drugs and being exposed to things like Trang. And I feel like that's the best model we can do for right now. But before, there's kind of two divided models that some people believe that it's more of a moral idea that the person themselves is solely to blame for their addiction habits, but that they can change. And then the other one is the disease model that people believe that addiction is an illness and that, but the individual themselves is not responsible. And I don't believe in either the disease model or moral model. I believe they're both very outdated. And
responsible is just kind of a word that doesn't seem for me to correlate with addiction. Like, responsibility for the individual or not responsible, it just, I don't know if that's the right wording, but it just seems like off.
Like, for the moral model, that they believe that people want to take Trank and people want to take these things in overdose. Like, that doesn't seem right at all. That's why it's very outdated. And that's why the science community is going towards more of harm reduction. And this idea itself, harm reduction, is also very not stigmatized, but it's kind of divided and controversial. So,
unfortunately.
Even though there's been decades of research supporting harm reduction, it's just the fact that when I think politics come into play with harm reduction is that when everything goes askew, especially with safe, this is kind of going a little off, but with safe like drug consumption sites and things. And I know that there was a whole issue in Richmond particularly where people did not want drug consumption sites near their neighborhoods, but it was actually helping the people who use drugs who are there to have safe places to use drugs and be monitored in case they are going to experience an overdose.
Yeah, because I think a lot of people do have this knee-jerk reaction that comes from fear or comes from not understanding, and then it's just perpetuated and exploited in politics a lot as, you know, something we need to fight against. I've seen that, you know, in American politics too, like, you know, the war against drugs or something like that.
Oh, yeah.
And I found an interesting quote when I was researching, and it's, quote, "People talk about enabling, but you're just enabling someone to live longer," end quote. It's from some person, last name McLeod. I'm sorry. I didn't really get into the full quote, the citation.
Just the idea.
Is interesting. Because, I was like, oh, well, having these harm reduction options like naloxone or testing sites or anything like that is enabling them. It's actually making more people come in. But I think it's a better idea to reframe that. So, yeah, it's enabling someone to keep on living and keep on trying. And, you know, is that so bad?
It's another safety net to keep going. But, it's just the fact that this, for people who use drug, it's a very marginalized group in that society, I think, as a whole, doesn't really like people who are not sucking up the streets, but that kind of general idea where they're not a vital component to society, and then they just get pushed aside, even though we should care and be compassionate for everyone.
Yeah, and this whole pushing aside and neglectful treatment of people who use drugs, like in the downtown east side, just or anywhere, just makes the whole issue so much worse. Like, okay, maybe we shouldn't get into it, but I just know the mayor of Vancouver, when he was moving these groups and displacing these groups of people just so that they're out of the way and under the farce of, like, oh, it's dangerous for them to be like congregating here, and just moving them around to get them out of sight or to get them somewhere else, try to just disperse them, that's a very obvious sign of making the problem worse. Like, taking away their belongings, all these things, displacing them from where they're set up, and just, it was just horrendous. And that's a very good example, I think.
But I think, that reflects of what the general
consensus
of is for what people think about homeless people plus drug people who use drugs. And yeah, it's just such a tricky issue because there's no one set solution, because we can just move them. Okay, now we're kind of going into homelessness, but it's hard to move. You can't just keep moving and displacing the problem, but you gotta attack it straight on. But there's still no real solution for the opioid crisis.
Yeah, even right now with harm reduction, we're not even necessarily working on a solution for the crisis. We're just trying to make it less bad. And that's still a controversial thing to be done.
But I don't believe there actually is a solution, though, in the end. That personally for me is that...
And then what do you think we could... Should we not even try?
No, I think we should try. I think harm reduction is our best bet right now, and that we should reduce it as much as possible, going from like high levels of drug use to medium levels of drug use to low levels of drug use to potentially. And they're not saying that they're advocating for, oh, just using little amount. Their end goal is still no drug use, but they are saying that it is still okay to sometimes use drugs, and that they have to respect the decisions of the person who do that with kindness and compassion. But yeah, in the end goal for harm reduction is still no drug use. But this is the best option they can do. Go ahead.
I was just going to say it needs to be done in coherence with other things too. Like just doing, I think we mentioned it before, but just doing one of these angles is not going to fix the problem. We don't know what's fully going to fix the problem or if it will ever fully be fixed at all. But when I was doing a bit of research, the idea of proactive healthcare was coming up a lot, which I think in general is way better, because we have in Western medicine, it's a very much so reactive kind of prescription to whatever problem that we have.
What is proactive?
Proactive healthcare is just dealing with things before they get really bad.
Oh, public health.
Yeah. It's like they're in the Downtown East Side, I think they have like outreach teams where people are like going, or roving nurses I also saw. I'm not sure if they're still doing that, but they'd just be perusing the streets basically looking for people to help, as opposed to making people who use drugs coming to these very hard to access systems, like long wait times, all of these other barriers. Like it's so much harder to do that than if they just come to you and help you. I think that's really good. They catch some things before they can get worse, like the open wounds from Trank, for example.
Yeah. I would actually just like to say, because harm reduction is a form of public health, which proactive healthcare falls under.
Okay.
So so harm reduction also includes things like proactive health, like dealing with the problem and doing a primary intervention before the actual problem.
Okay, my bad. But I think it is still
that is a valid point for sure. But yeah, things like that, these things work. These things do work, even though they may not sound like they work, may not look like they work. There's been decades of research for doing things like that.
Yeah, and it's also just logically, it's going to be cheaper if you deal with the problem before it gets worse.
Yeah.
Like you're just dealing with a smaller problem, and it's more effective because you're cutting it more down at the root before it grows into something worse. So
exactly.
It just makes sense on every level.
Yeah, because instead of, at first you could have the nurses who deal with the wounds, or you could have the person who already has the wounds and must get amputated and now uses hospital beds to get amputated. And now society spends more money on that person because we're in the hospital now. Or with cops as well, the cops who have to go deal with people who are on the streets and people who are using drugs, and they have to get paid, and they have to go solve these things, solve these issues.
Yeah, but it's almost more of a question kind of like, oh, should we be putting money into cops with like interacting with the drug crisis if it is a public health problem?
I'd say it is a problem because they are always the first people to be called on.
Yeah.
And that's not intentionally like of course we don't want to have the cops called on these people, but this is just the result in especially Vancouver that I'd say majority of the cases have the cops called on them.
Yeah, so, and I feel like we should I don't know how we should change that, but I just don't think.
Yeah.
Or like some sort of training needs to be put in place, or a replacement even.
Maybe, yeah, potentially not having the cops come, but having a separate team of healthcare workers.
Yeah, I think that would be better. And also, just going back to the proactive healthcare thing of outreach nurses or outreach teams, I just wanted to quickly talk about relationship-centered care. So that's pretty much just, for example, having like a family doctor or something. Like, you have a relationship with them, you trust them, you can, like, they know your history, you can tell them about your problems. And I know this is a very idealized concept, because so many people don't even have family doctors. But I think especially within the drug crisis, it would be so beneficial to have these kinds of like medical relationships between people who use drugs and nurses who like know each other, they know the history and like how to help, because I think a lot of people in general who are marginalized don't have a lot of trust within like our general systems, especially if they're like colonial systems and aren't inclusive of everybody. So I think having this one-on-one relationship would instill a bit more trust to, you know, begin to like dissect the problem a bit more.
Yeah, I would definitely agree. The only problem is that these nurses and that these health workers don't want to work.
Yeah,
that's the biggest problem. Maybe we can fix it with more funding and having increasing their salaries or something like that. But then it kind of misses from the bullet or misses from the bullseye, because then maybe those nurses will want to go into the job to help people who use drugs for the money and not to actually go help them and want to go help them. So it's the big divide that how do we approach that?
Yeah, I am just talking from like would be so much better than what we have, but I know that there are like, it's a difficult thing to deal with every day.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, just the lack of resources and people who even want to work in healthcare too right now is just like, it's a general issue.
Yeah, because we need more general doctors. We need more specialized doctors. We need more people to help these people in the downtown east side. We just need more healthcare workers in general. But that's just a Canadian issue. It's just Canada's issue as a whole.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of things there's a lot of things we're doing right, but there's a lot of things we also need to fix and pay more attention to. But we only have a certain amount of funding that we can really allocate to everything. So how do we do this? How do we fix it up? But anyways, that's getting a little too nationwide.
Yeah, at like that point, full crackdown. Revolution.
Yeah, full
distribute all of the funds to the people. I don't know.
Only healthcare. No money. Climate change, not real.
It is so difficult when the drug crisis is like confounded with all of these other factors, like the housing crisis and like all of these other things. Like, how do we tackle this from all these different angles? And even just addiction itself is an extremely difficult thing to combat, but coupled with everything else, it's just...
Yeah.
It's tough.
The tie with politics is so critical, because people don't want to really vote for a leader who really wants to help these people that are living on the streets or using drugs, because they'd rather have their taxes go to something else, like stuff that the general population uses. They don't care, and maybe some of you out there don't really care about what the homeless people are doing or what the drug people who use drugs are using. Like, doesn't matter. And so why would they vote for someone who wants to radicalize this issue? And it's just, it is definitely very intertwined with so many other factors.
It is just, I think it's intertwined with the selfishness that comes along with capitalism and just wanting everything for yourself too.
Capitalism.
It's just, you know, diverts you from what's really important in your own community, and it's kind of just making how much money you earn as an individual like the most important kind of piece of property that you own, in a way that you don't want other people to steal. I hear that kind of rhetoric a lot, like, oh, stealing our money or like our tax dollars.
I feel like it's kind of idolizing, and we've been kind of idolizing as a whole to always work for ourselves and mm-hmm. work independently, especially in the Western world where it's not very collectivist at all.
Yeah.
That we should work for our own goals, make our own money, don't look at the other people around us. And I feel like those values are kind of instilled in how we change our health or shape our health policies as well. So,
and how every individual is responsible for themselves, that very much ties into the moral model of, the drug users themselves are responsible, but we don't look at it on a bigger scale of historical and systemic factors either. It's it's individual. But we don't really explore anything else. So just something to think about.
But anyways, that was, I think, very, very small little topic to very wide issue, but that's just the kind of gist we want to get at, is just the awareness, just to tie it all back again, is the awareness of how trank like this and drug toxicity kind of pans into our massive public health emergency in BC that we've been having since 2016. And so I feel like we just need to sometimes, if we have a voice that we'd like to use sometimes, and we'd like to just give an extra word to this, even though most of you and probably have read about it sometimes in the news. It's kind of glossed over because there's been lots of other issues like Palestine, the elections that are about to go on or are going on. So, this is just our little corner of the world.
Update.
Yeah, just a little update. This is not completely breaking news either. The trank and xylazine issue has been going on for years, especially last year in the news. It was pretty big, especially mm-hmm. in Philadelphia, for example. But anyways, just to note that all these issues that are happening outside the world are also here in our own backyard that we should be aware of.
Yeah, and in our own community too.
Yeah.
That's what DJ Coco means.
Yeah, these
but just
are
to
our
make
people.
It more this is our community, what's happening in our community, and we cannot afford to turn a blind eye and ignore or neglect these people in our community.
Yeah, no, and these are people, these are your brothers, these are your family members, these are your friends.
Mm-hmm.
I know a friend who is kind of slipping down a dangerous slope with drug use, and it can happen to anyone close to you. And they're not just numbers that we see 12,000 deaths. Okay. These are actual people in our lives and that we know of.
Yeah, and they've gone through trauma. They've gone through generational trauma, colonization, all of these awful things. So we can't just say it's their fault for that.
No.
Yeah.
So, anyways.
Anyways.
That is
I'm
the
not
end
sure
of
what
our
song to play now.
Yeah, we don't want to do super upbeat song after that, but I think we're going to do a little BB
we're
Club.
We're going to do a little BB Club.
BB Club.
I think.
It's a fan
Dependable.
Favorite.
Dependable. Yeah.
But
this song is going to be Le Faux. But I just should be have final thoughts before we get into it.
I think those were mostly my final thoughts of my final couple sentences, but just definitely I feel like compassion and kindness, we need to spread more of that, and we need to be more aware of our brothers, our sisters, our friends, our families, who are all in this, we're all in this together, and we should all fix and try to at least fix this together. And there things like this, that drug toxicity is just going to get worse, and there are now ways that we can't even reverse the effects. So
we just need to bring these community perspectives into politics more, into legislation more, have this DJ Coco was saying, more empathy and compassion for what's going on, and more social services would be nice as well.
And we also just did the brief rundown, so definitely look more into harm reduction yourself. We couldn't get everything onto air here, but I feel like it's definitely a very controversial topic that needs more in-depth studying into to fully make a decision on what you think about harm reduction. So anyways, that was that. Hopefully we didn't bore you too much, but I think that was very critical.
I was not bored at all.
No,
I hope you weren't either.
Very critical topic. Mm-hmm. So, But anyways, back to the music. So yeah, it's like we said, it is BB Club and it is Le Fou. Take a listen.
Great pronunciation there.
Thank you.
On the low, 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 play. I dare you tell the truth. You don't come out of you. You won't come out of you. On the low, 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 low.
Welcome. We're just here to say our final goodbyes. Thank you so much for tuning in for our slumber party. We're here every 6 to 7 on Tuesdays. And next up, you'll be hearing Revolution Rock at 7 p.m. and then Bitcoover at 8 p.m. with our music coordinator, Connor. So, yeah, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you all so much for tuning in. We really appreciate it. And yeah, we're here every week, so we'll be here next week as well.
Bye.
Bye. This song is Terranion by Angel Science, by the way, just so you guys know. It's pretty good.
Thanks for listening. See you guys next week, Tuesdays at 6 p.m.